Hello, everybody. It's so great to be here with you on such a powerful day. I'm super excited. This day is all about change and connection and sisterhood. And as the saying goes, a challenged world is a world where change can actually occur. So let's get started. I'm really excited. I want to hear from everybody today. Feel free to write. I want to hear your questions, your thoughts, and really enjoy this time together as a conversation with women.
Amazing. Thank you, Monica. So as we receive some questions, I'd love to begin by asking you, what are the main challenges facing women today?
Well, I think that we've come a long way in the past 100 years in terms of gender equality, but there's still a very long way to go. If we look at our world today, we still don't have equal pay. Oftentimes, women are overlooked for promotions over men, even if they may be more qualified. And I think that the pandemic has really highlighted and spotlighted this issue as well. We know that domestic violence has spiked, that women are still the primary caregivers for their children and yet are still expected to work at full capacity as well and juggle both. And it's especially been difficult for single mothers, where we know statistically that they save less and spend more than other mothers or fathers even when they are a single parent. So I think there are a lot of opportunities for us here to really change the way that we still do things.
Definitely. And what do you feel, Monica, needs to change to facilitate greater opportunities for us women?
Well, my expertise isn't in public policy, so I'll speak on what I do know. And that is, we can change the way we think about this and we can change the way we speak. Words are very powerful. I know that with my own daughters, I really try to be very selective of how I say certain things. So for instance, we've all heard phrases like, oh, you know, he's crying like a girl, or he's running like a girl. Well, first of all, girls run fast. And second of all, boys do cry. And it's a good thing to be able to feel emotions and be in touch with your emotions. So I think that even though it seems innocuous, I do think that those kinds of phrases and terminologies and the way that we speak and therefore the way we think really needs to change. There's a woman named Molly Lewis. She's a cognitive scientist, and she actually suggested, which I agree with, that we start using different phrases in terms of talking about people's careers. For instance, if you have a phrase like waitress, you could change it to server. If you have stewardess, you can change it to flight attendant. And even though this really seems like very small thing, in different countries, these words are more powerful, and it eventually leads to gender bias as well. And then I also think that one point that I can speak to personally as well is to reframe our household duties. So that would be shopping, cleaning, caretaking, cooking. Basically, those things are unpaid work, as we could say. And actually, the UN reported this year that women do much more unpaid work than men do. So let's look at it for what it is. It's actually work, and it shouldn't really be assigned to a man or a woman. I think, I don't want to go off on a different place here, but I help a lot of couples in terms of relationships and navigating relationships where each party feels heard. And women, you know, I always say to men, it's not those big gestures that you're going to do. It's not necessarily the romantic thing where you come home with flowers, although those are nice, and a beautiful ring. But it's really about, you know, at the end of the day, when we might be exhausted, you know, your husband will come over and wash the dishes or bathe the children or put them to sleep without you even having to ask. Because at the end of the day, it should be something. I mean, we're both parents, right? It's, or we both run the household. It should be something that's shared. So I don't know if anybody's written in or joined in, or if anybody wants to share their experience with this, but I would love to hear that. But we can keep going with your questions as well.
Yeah, guys, feel free to write to us, please. We want to hear your questions, and Monica is going to share with us. So Monica, I have another question for you while we have more people writing into us. Who inspires you?
Well, the truth is I'm inspired by everybody. I think that a mistake that we make in life is we assign only people, certain people, to be able to influence us. I think that we can get messages from each and every single person that comes across our path if we choose to see them in that way. And I think that's an inspiring process. Personally and specifically, I can name a few. Columnist Kalman, he's a great Kabbalist who really, the way he speaks about the soul and about growth and how to take your own soul seriously has really inspired me. I love anything Malcolm Gladwell writes. Of course, the Rev. Karen, my teachers, have inspired me most in my life. Martha Beck, Louise Hay, so many.
Amazing. And speaking kind of the challenges that women face, what, I don't know if I like the word coping, but what coping strategies do you recommend or what has worked for you?
Well, I love this question because I don't really like the word coping. It feels like you're not really going through a process, right, to the other side. You're kind of just like learning to live with something. So to really get through this kind of process, when I have felt belittled or judged or even rejected by others, is that I chose me. And because in those situations, you really do have two choices. You can either choose to believe all the negative things you hear about yourself, which doesn't lead to a very happy, fulfilling life. It also doesn't make you feel very strong or powerful. Or you can choose to believe, choose yourself. You can choose to stop relying on external feedback. And when you stop relying on external feedback, then what happens is you really go internally and you get the messages and the information and the strength that you need that comes within. In the end, we all have the answers to every perceived problem or shortcoming or challenge that we will go through or that we are going through. And far too often we make the mistake, again, of believing what's negative. And there is a really good reason we do that. Our brains are hardwired to remember the negative or dangerous or bad things that have happened to us to protect us from having that exchange again in the future, right? So we tend to carry around all the negative things and we forget the positive. So to really change this, these experiences that we have outside that damage us or hurt us or make us feel small, is to really just choose you and stop relying on external feedback and validation.
I love that. Amazing. I see we have so many questions coming in, Monica. So maybe just to ask you one more thing. What personal issues did or do you face as a woman today?
And I love this question too. So for those of you who know me, I don't believe in suffering. I believe that we do feel pain and we experience that for good reason. Emotions are indicators and they're there to show us what we need to change or what we need to focus on. But to stay in a state of constant pain or struggle, that suffering, I do believe is unnecessary. And I think that we can waste a lot of time in that space. And to be honest, I have been belittled and maligned by women as well as men, not just men. And in fact, it has happened from very strong women. And I remember when I first had that experience, I thought to myself, well, you know, you've already arrived, you've made it. Why is this the situation? I've also seen that very often, if people have wanted to get to my husband or hurt him, it would be easier to hurt me first. And by hurting me, it has hurt him. So unfortunately, this is a sad reality of the world we live in. And I bring it to light, not because I want anybody to feel bad for me or anybody else. I really, every single thing that's ever happened to me, I actually welcome at this point. I would not change a single thing. And hence the suffering doesn't exist because I see every single thing, even the most painful, I guess especially the most painful things that have happened, as something that has helped me be more compassionate and to make a commitment never to do that to another woman or a man for that matter. And it's interesting because we start out our relationships with other women as there are secret keepers, there are confidants. In fact, and not coincidentally, last night I was putting my youngest daughter to sleep, Abigail, and she's 7. And, you know, when I got to her bed, she went into bed and then she called me up, as she often does, many, many times. And when I got to her bed, I saw like a pile of tissue. And I said, Abigail, what's all this tissue about? And then, and it was dark. So then when my eyes adjusted, I could see that she'd been crying. And she'd watched a show about best friends. And she's looked at me in her innocence and said, Mommy, when am I going to meet my best friend? Like, it was the most beautiful gift that she would ever, I'm actually going to get emotional, that she would ever receive. This person, as she saw it, and it actually reminded me that I think we all view it this way. I certainly did at her age and even in years that followed. That person that really understands you, you know. And she was saying in the show that they had a window, their houses, you know, it's, of course it's theatrical and it's a movie and it's not in reality. I said, you'll find your best friend one day, but I don't think you're going to have a tunnel from your window to hers and all the things that go with it. But I think it's that idea of curiosity and connectedness and having somebody who will, you know, your joy is their joy, you know, your pain is their pain, and that they would do anything for you and show up, you know. So, and I don't think that as women we ever stop craving that. I think that there comes a time where we tend to go to men to be that for us, and we don't appreciate the role a woman plays, which is very different. It's a very different relationship. Another story about Abigail, a couple years ago, it was her friend's birthday party, and she was so excited to get her friend a gift. And we went to the store, and this is when Elsa and Anna will forever be big, but Frozen had just come out. I think it was the first one. And she said, oh, I want to buy her this costume. She's going to love this dress. She loves Elsa, on and on and on. So we got the dress. I wrapped it. And the birthday was like 4 days later. It hadn't come yet. And I wrapped it. She must have unwrapped that present like 5 different times before the birthday party even happened, because she was so excited to imagine what her friend would feel when she opened the box. And then the day of the birthday, we got there and she opens the gift. And you had to see Abigail's face. She was just as if it was her present, as if she was opening it for herself. She was so elated and excited for the joy she'd bring her friend. And again, this is how most female relationships begin. I remember in high school, you know, the idea of finding a new friend, discovering new friends, sleepovers and summer camps. And, you know, your first experience is driving in your car, learning all kinds of new things. And there is this beauty that can exist between women. And again, I think that at some point we start to think of women as competition, and we start to think that there's only space for one of us at the top. But the truth is, we all have unique gifts and individuality. We all have something different and novel to offer. And if we can just stand by one another's sides and help build each other rather than being each other down, you know, first of all, I think it would help with gender equality tremendously, but also it fills a void in us that sometimes we don't fully understand in the moment. I know that when, and by the way, as much as I have been attacked by other women, my deepest points of gratitude and connection have been in my exchanges with other women. So, you know, and if we look at what sisterhood is, right? It's and I want to read this definition exactly because I think it's really beautiful. As it says, it's a solidarity of women based on shared conditions, experiences, and concerns. It's one of the strongest bonds we can experience, and it transcends and transforms us. It exists outside of race, religion, and culture. And feeling the support of another woman is like no other feeling. I met with a new student not too long ago, and she's very successful. She's beautiful inside and out. And she was explaining how she hasn't really had close female relationships. After a brief conversation, after an hour, she said she felt so strong and supported in a way that she hadn't, in a way that her husband couldn't even give her. So I think that I want to bring this idea to the forefronts of our mind and really celebrate each other, because what we can offer, again, as Abigail is craving that friendship, her long lost to be best friend, you know, where is she? When will she find me? What will she look like? You know, in her imagination, she even had a visual of what this person will be. And Kabbalistically, we know that we have more in common with people than we do differences. And if we start to look at all the people around us and we see them as our equals, as as people that we can support to also be strong, to find their voice, to find their uniqueness, then we will feel more fulfilled by the things that we also set out to accomplish and do. So that's the long, long answer of your question. Are there some questions that have come in too?
There are many. Do you want to have a look, Monica?
Sure, let's see. 1 second. Oh, I have 79 text messages. Okay. Let's see. You know what, Kate, I'm just going to let you pick it, or Liz, because there's a lot on my phone going on. So if you want to just text, how would we do this? So text me one and I'll read it, or we just bring the person up, right? Okay, let's bring somebody on. And then after these questions, we have a few fun workshops that I think will help everybody kind of cultivate this for themselves.
Vanessa's coming on to ask a question right now.
Okay, great.
Hello.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, good to meet you. I'm so happy to be here with you. I'm tuning in from Greece. And I have this issue. So I grew up thinking that if one wants to be successful, you have to act like a man. So there's a saying, if you're in Rome, do as the Romans do, right? So I thought, okay, having real impact and success, be like a man. Obviously, this didn't work out very well, and I experienced a burnout twice. So now that I've realized, okay, I have to change my behavior, I took time and harness my feminine side, I'm about to return, let's say, to the business stage. And I'm really thinking, so how can I tap into my feminine potential, into my nurturing side, even when I am in meetings with men, when I'm negotiating, when I have to make an argument, without falling back into this, let's say, very male dominated or very, very male behavior that we kind of are conditioned with.
Well, I guess I have a question for you before I give you my answer. And that is, what does it mean to act like a man?
So I realized the way I dress, the way I make my arguments, the way I want to come at, the way I want to make my points in arguments are very, very forceful, very, very perhaps loud, righteous, very fact-based, not very creative, not very much tapping into my own intuition, which I would like to obviously nourish and harness when I'm in such negotiations or in meetings.
So I think it's interesting. I think that whether we were talking about acting like a woman or a man, I think more than anything, you just want to act like you, because they've hired you to do a job. They've hired you based on your expertise and your wisdom and what you can offer. So it would behoove you to try and act like anybody else. And that's probably why it's not working, because it doesn't feel authentic. And I think that, you know, if a person wants to find flaw in you, they're going to, whether you act like a man or a woman. It doesn't really matter. They're going to look for issues. So my advice to you, and what's always worked for me, I fully felt more powerful and like I was in my own when I really stopped caring what other people thought. And again, that thing that I talked about with external feedback, if you're constantly looking over your shoulder or looking at people's faces to see how they're responding to something you've said or what you think, you know, you're never going to really be able to stand in your own strength and your own power. So the first thing I would do is work on eliminating all that external noise, external validation, and really just arrive on your terms, which is to be authentic. That means knowing who you are, knowing what you believe, and having the courage to say what you think, even if it won't be understood by all. Because at the end of the day, you were hired because they believe in you, right? But that doesn't mean that you need everybody in the room to agree with you, right? As long as you know you're doing a good job and the person that you were actually working for thinks you're doing a good job, the rest is just a distraction. And really, you'll find that it's going to hold you back more than anything. And I think that's the one thing you probably would regret years from now than anything else you do in the workplace.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So I don't know if we have another one now, but we have another one set up. Okay, so that will come in too.
Yeah, Marley is going to come on next.
Marley? Great.
Hi, Monica.
Hi, Marley. So, how are you?
I'm well. My question is sort of similar to the last question. In the workplace, I work at a car dealership and I'm one of the only women at the car dealership. And oftentimes both employees and sales managers speak to me in a way that's extremely disrespectful. But in order for me to stand up for myself, it's a fine line between acting reactive and coming from a place of ego versus saying what needs to be said and standing up for what is right. And that's something that I've been balancing a lot lately, is deciding what needs to be said and what is ego versus what's necessary, because it's often turned around into me being emotional for not being able to stand being yelled at.
So can you give me an example? Because I find this really interesting, actually, of like what that dialogue or that exchange looks like what kind of things are said to you?
Sure. A couple of days ago, I was late, about 20 minutes late, and I had an appointment coming in at 10 and it was 9:20 and they called and I was parking my car and he said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm just parking." He said, "Why didn't you text me?" I said, "My appointment's coming in at 10. I'm just parking. I'll be there in a moment." And working at a car dealership, it's a lot like working for yourself because it's based on commission. And so then he immediately said, "Have some pride. You're so disrespectful. You disrespect me. You disrespect the dealership. If this is the way you're going to act, I would rather not see you today. Just turn around and go home. Somebody else will get your sale. Don't even come in." And I just left. And then the next day when I approached the situation after missing a day of work because of this, it became a he said, she said type of situation with the GM. And they said, the GM said, "I told the sales manager he cannot talk to you this way because you're a woman and you're a millennial. And so you're sensitive and emotional. And so he needs to be careful how he talks to you." And I just, all I said on the phone was, "Okay." So I'm not sure. I don't know. The person who seems sensitive and emotional in the situation does not feel it to be me.
Well, I wish you would have said that, actually. Wow. Well, first of all, this first person that spoke to you, does he speak to everybody like that? Or is that just to women or to
me
you?
And the other young woman that works here? Yes. And sometimes
and he's
other
different.
People, sometimes other people on occasion, but he's just very easy to lose his temper.
So I think that that's how I would approach situations like this. I would pause for sure and look at the person that I'm having the exchange with. And if you're honest with yourself, which you clearly have insight into it, I would say, okay, what is this person? Is this personal to me? Is it not? Is it on them? Is it not? Is there merit in what he's saying? Is there not? And once you get that clear in your head, then you can choose your response. I probably would have walked into the office and gone to the general manager anyway, or sent an email and saying, "Well, I'm here already," you know, that way. And then when the general manager approached you, I wouldn't say, "Okay." I would say, "You know, I hear what you're saying, but I really don't feel emotional about it. This was the situation, and how would you have liked me to handle it?" Right? I would have a conversation. I think sometimes when we ask questions, instead of even stating things like, "Oh, this is how I feel," just ask a lot of questions. And through that, it becomes very clear what the real situation is, I think, to everybody involved, whether they admit it or not. That's certainly how I've learned to communicate, especially with very difficult people who I know don't really want to hear what I have to say, or who might have a more invested ego in the conversation. I just ask a lot of questions, I got a lot of information, and then it becomes clear if I want to say something, if I don't, what I should say, or if I want to wait 3 days and then approach it. So I think that even if his issue is more with women, I wouldn't make that my issue, right? I would just look at it as, how do I want to handle this person to person? And what ways can I carry myself where I won't regret that later?
Thank you.
Yeah, rock on. So Rachel, while we're waiting for another question, do you have a question, or do you want to share something that one of your experiences in this way?
Hi, Monica.
Yeah, I'm putting you on the spot, totally.
Yes. I see there's so many questions coming in, so I can either share a personal question.
Oh, if you see another one, but until we bring up the next person, we can get them ready and you can share.
Yeah. I think maybe a personal question that I have is that I find that it's sometimes really hard to find that balance, a little bit like the previous question, of when to speak up, when to assert ourselves in a place where we feel maybe that we are not supported, and when to also kind of, you know, use what we learned so much in Kabbalah to continue to go through that introspection. I find many times as women, we take a little bit longer to process things maybe than men, to speak up for the things that we want. So maybe if you can share a little bit more about finding a balance between kind of asserting ourselves again in that right way and navigating in a place where maybe we feel a bit less supported at times.
Well, I think it comes to intention. You know, why, when you take time to think about your response, you know, is it because you are afraid to speak up, or you don't like confrontation? Although I don't really like that word, because I think everything can be a conversation. It's just how we feel about having the conversation that makes it confrontational, or feeling like it might be. So I think that when, you know, I'm really an advocate for speaking up. That doesn't mean yelling. That doesn't mean being nasty. That doesn't mean holding yourself in any way that you're not comfortable with. It just means clearly communicating your needs, your desires, your experience. And I think that's very healthy for both men and women. I think very often people have the conversation they need to have with the wrong person. And it's usually somebody else not related, and it's speaking bad about somebody else. It's behind their back. And I don't think it's effective. And I think it's detrimental to yourself, really, more than anything. So I think that it's important to start practicing. And even if you don't feel like speaking up at first, at least write it down. Get clear about if you're going to have the conversation, this is what it would look like. This is what I would say. This is where I'm coming from. Be clear. Are you coming from hurt? Are you actually coming from a place where you want to create change and more efficiency? And when you answer all those questions, and also if you're really triggered, give it 3 days. By the end of that, whatever emotion you're feeling really won't be there so much, but you'll be clear about what it is that you want to communicate and what is no longer important to you. I certainly tell my daughters this all the time. Very often, especially my older one's a little bit older now, but even still, you know, I would say, well, I think it's a conversation you need to have. We can talk about how you want to have that conversation, or even if they wanted to ask somebody for something or order something, you know, Mom, can you do it? I'm like, I could do it, but let's practice having you do it, and I'll be here with you until you're comfortable. Let's talk about the ways you want to do it. But I think that that is a skill that every person needs. I think that that would create a world where we are kinder to one another and that we empathize with one another more, because we really understand where they're coming from and we understand where we're coming from, and we can clearly communicate that. And that takes practice.
I love that. I love that what you say about not coming from a place of hurt, because I think today so many women that do speak up for themselves, sometimes it's coming from that place, and then nobody is really open to hearing us, right? So it's really, I think that's where the key is for me. So thank you.
Thank you. Now we have Melissa.
Hi, Monica.
Hi, Melissa.
I'm coming from Switzerland, and I wanted to just comment and ask you about this. You had spoke about the power of words, and oftentimes girls, women, when they are strong and independent, they're labeled as bossy.
There's another B word there also.
Difficult, labeled. Yes. overbearing. And these are often adjectives that you, or somebody else has mentioned, emotional. And these are actually not ever used in performance conversations with men. And I'm very careful about this as I work, but I'd like to hear what you think about this, because this is something that I've had to deal with as I grew up in the corporate world, being labeled as aggressive and men are assertive. Men are the boss, women are bossy. And how do you start changing this? You know, it's very difficult, actually.
Yeah, and it's upsetting and disappointing, really. I've seen it a lot. We see it in politics a lot, right? You can see clearly how men and women are treated differently. If a woman is outspoken and loud, she's all of the things that you just said. Not even loud, if she's outspoken and passionate, let's say. And if a man communicates that way, or even worse, you never hear those labels. That's the reality. That certainly has happened with me also, even now. I mean, if my husband and I are speaking, that, so, you know, it's just, you'll get this feedback, and it's not fair, because women have been expected to express themselves a certain way. They're supposed to be soft-spoken, and their demeanor a certain way, and it takes a lot to change those cultural beliefs, right? So the way that I respond to it is first, I don't take it seriously, because I know where I'm coming from. And for the most part, I think I give myself a lot of emotional feedback. So I'm pretty aware of how I communicate. Of course, I want to listen to all feedback. So first, I'll listen to it and say, okay, is there anything here? Could I have said it differently, perhaps? Or does this feel like it's really fair or warranted, right? So first, I get clear about how I feel about what I'm hearing. And then from that place, I think the only way to create change is to slowly educate people, not preach and not act like you're educating them, but teach people how you want to be treated, right? So if somebody said that about you and you get that feedback, you know, you could approach them and say, I heard you had some thoughts you wanted to share with me. I really want to hear what you have to say. And if you come, first of all, they'll be shocked. But if you come from this place of really being curious and also open, and considering you're speaking to somebody who's actually normal, because many people in the world are not, then you probably can have an elevated conversation, and maybe they'll learn something. Maybe they're unaware too. So I think benefit of the doubt is the second thing. And advocating. And whether the person hears you or not, maybe they'll always be that person that speaks like that. But, you know, at least you feel like you've spoken for yourself. But you can come off like the way I sound right now. And I've had these conversations a lot in the last 2 years, especially, where I'll hear something, and it may not even be in what you just said, but I'll hear something that didn't sit right with me, and I didn't hear it from the person directly, so I'll go over to the person and say, you know, I heard that there's a conversation you want to have, I'd love to have it, I really want to hear what you have to say. And it's always actually ended well. It's questionable if I want to be in a relationship with a person after, but it's, no, I'm kidding. But it opens up a space where there's just clarity, and it's just two souls talking to one another. And from that space, I really do think change can happen.
Thank you.
And I think we have Andrea. Did I read that? Yes. And then after this question, I'm going to do a workshop with you guys, but then we're going to open it up for more questions. So please keep writing to us. It's so inspiring for me to speak to people in Switzerland and Greece and all over the world, places I would love to be again, hopefully sometime soon when the pandemic's over. But this is really, really exciting. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Monica. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Let's see. So I have a question. So I feel that women's health, mental health, has to be priority number one, especially during this pandemic, but all the time, not just during the pandemic. It's just risen. Mental health issues have risen during the pandemic. I feel it's really important that as a society that we focus on our mental health. And taking care of our minds is very, very important. It's got to be number one. How to take care of our minds? Any tips? Like what is good self-care for our minds and our mental health as women?
Yeah, I love this question. I get this type of question often about, self-care, because I think that sometimes we think self-care is, which, by the way, I enjoy all of these things, but, you know, getting a massage or getting our nails done, you know, kind of pampering ourselves. And I do think that there that is a nice thing to do for sure, and to enjoy that. But self-care, I think, is to really take the time to know who you are, and again, know what you believe, and learn to really express that in the world. Because what happens when you don't use your mind for growth and to work towards things that are important to you, that are meaningful to you, your mind becomes cluttered with other things, right? It's like it becomes fertilized by negative things or other people's thoughts, other people's desires, goals, opinions, and that leaves for not a great mental state. Then we also become consumed with helping everybody else, whether it's taking care of our parents that are elderly or our children or our husband or our household. And if you don't take the time to pause and constantly feed and nurture that aspect of you, that soul, right? Because everything starts in the soul. And then from there, it's expressed through body, mind, and spirit. So I often speak how important it is to give to all of those areas of yourself. But the number one place to start is to make sure that you're constantly feeding and growing your soul. And you do that through study, through prayer, through meditation, through dance, right? So you need to actually use all the parts of your body, body, mind, and spirit, but it has to be for the benefit and used in ways that is constantly nourishing who you are, right? So, and who you desire to be. So if we spend a lot of time just giving and doing for others and not going back to really making sure that we're changing ourselves to become happier, to grow in ways that we want to grow, right? Or to drop characteristics that don't serve us anymore, or to change our environment that isn't a healthy one, maybe toxic friends or a toxic relationship, right? So by being clear, by feeding to yourself, you become more intuitive, you get more answers, and therefore you're able to live the life that you really want and eliminate the parts of your life that isn't working for you. And I think that often, you know, because we do so much as women and we say yes to so many things, we often get so distracted in doing that we don't actually focus on being. And there's a great exercise actually that can really help. I've used this for decades. It's, you know, when most people start to think about their goals and things that they want to grow about themselves, the first thing we do, right, is we create a to-do list naturally. I need to do this, I need to do that. But often, if we really look at our to-do list, it's a lot of things that we don't really need to do, right? We think that once I organize my closet and once I finish all the bills and once I sign up my children for whatever that list is, then I'm going to get to like the really, really important things. What has to happen is to really focus on the being, right? So if you look at your to-do list, is it on just doing or is it on being? What is it reflecting? The to-be list is the first list you should create, and from that, a to-do list. So for instance, if you want to be, if you want to publish a book, well, then your to-do list would then be spending 3 days a week or 3 hours a week, whatever you can do on writing to get closer to that goal. If what's important to you is to be a mother, that is present and really there for her children, then doing right on the to-do list would be making sure that you put them to sleep at night, or you have, you know, 5 real conversations a week, or you reprioritize their schedule so you have more quality time together. So I think that by really just doing that one exercise every week, I think it would really help with the mental state and mental clarity.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the question.
Absolutely.
So let's hold the rest of them, and I want to get to a few more in a few minutes. So I want to do this workshop. It wasn't really planned, but I think it's important because I think a lot of us as women, we feel kind of stuck. I think most people do anyway, especially now. Life has kind of paused in this past year, and we can get in all kinds of ruts, right? So this idea of getting unstuck, and we have many, many reasons for getting into a situation we're in. Often we feel like it's emotional. I'm stuck because I'm lonely, or I'm stuck because I'm sad, or I'm stuck because I don't like the job I'm in. But in fact, those are just emotions, and emotions are indicators. And you can choose a new emotion. You can choose a response, and you can choose change. I think far too often we choose to do nothing, which, by the way, is still a choice. So I really want all of you that are joining me today, think about where you feel stuck in your life. And as we were talking about female relationships, friendships, right, sisterhood, a good way to get past that space of comparing yourself to other people's success, other women's success, and maybe feeling less than, is to really ask yourself these questions. First, I want you to think of a role model that you have in your life. It could be Mother Teresa. It could be Karen Berg. It could be your grandmother. It could be men also. Just think of a role model you have. Okay, everybody has their role model in their mind. And now I want you to ask yourself this question. There's three questions here. Do you know how this person that you're thinking about, do you know how they live their lives and how they got to the place that makes you want to emulate them? So it's yes or no. And if you do, then maybe just write a few words about that. I'll say it again. Do you know how they live their lives and how they got to the place that makes you want to emulate them? The second question is, what steps did they take? So again, what steps did they take? And the third question, I love this one, is how did they handle setbacks? And I think what's really powerful about this exercise, I mean, many things, but if you don't know the answers to these questions, this is really important for you. Okay, and in terms of getting unstuck. So last question is, how did they handle setbacks? And now I want you to write down the answer to these two questions. How do you mirror their actions each day? Right, so if this is somebody that you really emulate, that you look up to as a role model, how are you mirroring those actions every day? And the second question is, what actions, right? Actions are you taking to be like them? So if the answer to both of those questions is nothing, then really you have to ask yourself this, is what can you do differently each day to get your desired outcome? And honestly, I think people stay stuck for far too long because they focus on the negative, right, of what is making them feel stuck, when if you follow this little exercise and you actually commit to doing this work every day, you can become unstuck. And then you will join all of us together, united, strong, to really support one another in so many ways. And the other question I often ask myself, which is a really good way to get unstuck, is I ask myself this often, is where do I want to be, or where do I see myself in 1 year from now, in 5 years from now, and 10 years from now. And you can apply this to every single thing. As to the last question we had, right, to body, mind, and spirit, where do you want to see yourself in terms of your work and your relationship, in terms of in your health or your fitness? So where do you see yourself in 1, 5, 10 years? Because when you start to look at life that way, it's very hard to stay stagnant. And then we're going to do one more workshop. I actually want to read to you from my book, Fear is Not an Option. It's 7 things I want my daughters to know. And then we're going to open it back up to questions, because these 7 things, it took me, I wrote this a little while ago, so it took me 40 years to actually understand, live, and master. And I wrote it for my daughters because I wanted them to be able to feel that much earlier than I did, with a lot of less pain in the process of discovering that. So hopefully all of you have read my book and this list won't be new to you, but I think it's really powerful to revisit it today on International Women's Day. And then I want you to think about, and then hopefully share and participate, when you came to understand these things for yourself, or if it's something that you're still really struggling with to overcome. I would love to hear that. So I'm going to read it for you. It's really super small on my screen. So I will open my book and read it. We can make it bigger. Perfect. Okay. The first one, your body is part of your expression. You are physically strong. Use your body, your strong legs, your graceful hands, your sassy hips. Remain fearless in your body and don't ever allow yourself to hate any part of yourself. Your body is perfect and strong. And I actually remember when I wrote that, my daughter Miriam at the time, I think she was 13, and she was taking a hip hop class. And she was owning it. I mean, every move, every dance, and she was having fun in the process. She wasn't looking in the mirror, judging herself. And, oh, how does my side look when I turn that way? Or, you know, is that person thinner? Whatever we do when we look in the mirror, she was just full on in the joy of feeling her body. So the second one is, never be ashamed of your passions. Do what speaks to you. Read about what interests you. Be friends with people you like, and don't let others' opinions embarrass you about what you love. Never give up on who you are or what you believe in for someone else. You are 100% worthwhile and whole, just as you are. Three. Make friends. Don't be afraid of making new friends. Old friends who are true are not going to be alienated by new friends. I learned that one for sure. Not every friend will stay in your life forever, and that's okay. Some friends are just for certain times. While it hurts to lose a friend, it should never keep you from being open and sharing of yourself with new people in your life. Remember, everyone in your life starts out as a stranger. Four, talk to me even when we disagree. Don't be afraid to tell me what you're feeling or thinking, even if you know I will disagree. It's okay to disagree with me. I want you to feel safe to express any emotion. Share any scenario with me, knowing that I love you unconditionally, and there is nothing you could ever do or say that will make me stop loving you. You have a unique voice, and I always want to hear it. I learn from you all the time, and I don't want to miss any of the lessons that you have to teach me. Five, you are beautiful. I know I'm your mom and you sense bias, but it's the truth. And by the way, ladies, today, we're all beautiful. I mean, this is, I wrote it for my daughters, but really, if we can all just accept these as truth. In your face, I see the baby you were, the beautiful girl you are today, and the woman that you will one day become. Know your worth and your value. I don't want you to spend years of your life trying to convince yourself that you are beautiful and powerful and special. You are. Don't ever waste your time feeling less than. You are more than enough, and you will accomplish great things. Six, you are your own person. You and I have many things in common, but you aren't me. You're not destined to live the life that I have, nor experience the same challenges. Your path is your own, and I want very much to help guide you where your unique spirit needs to journey. And seven, it's them, not you. Nearly every time somebody hurts you, lashes out, or says something that makes you feel insecure, it's a manifestation of their own pain. It has very little to do with you other than that you happen to be in their proximity. Everyone is fighting their own battle, and conflicts will arise. People will be hurtful and nasty, and yes, it will hurt. Just remember, it's really not about you, it's about them. While you can learn something from the experience, you do not need to accept their judgments. Ah. Took me 40 years to understand this. Please, let's all be so much kinder to ourselves and to each other. So let's open this up. Who wants to join me in sharing anything or asking anything? I really want to hear what you have to say.
I know Sandra's ready.
Okay. Well, here's Miriam. Miriam came up. I don't know. It says Miriam Romero. Anyway, whoever.
She's also ready.
So okay. Hi, Miriam. Let's start with Miriam, and then we'll go to Sandra.
Hi, Monica. Nice to meet you. I'm Miriam, and I'm based in Mexico. I'm really pleased of giving this opportunity to ask you a question. So I'm a very young working woman, and I see that myself and my friends were very successful in our working area, but we're not that so much in our relationships area, meaning marriage or a boyfriend. So I wanted to ask you, how do you balance your work and your personal life, especially your role as in your marriage and in within your family?
Well, I think it starts with your beliefs, right? I mean, I do have another question for you. What do you believe a relationship will bring you? And also my second question is, do you really desire one and want to put time, effort, and energy into that?
So I'm currently married. But it has not been easy to balance work and marriage life. And of course, I desire to have a successful relationship. And I think that was your first question. I can't remember your first question.
Yeah. Well, what do you believe? Yeah, a relationship should give you, and what you should offer. I mean, how does that look for you when you imagine it?
So I think what it looks to me, it's more of a loving relationship and support each other and engagement with one another's interests.
Okay, great. So if that's what you believe a relationship should bring and be, all the things that you just listed actually requires time, effort, and energy, right? Okay, so if it does, and right now you're putting most of your energy in work, then realistically, right, if we're just looking at the facts here, do you think that your relationship will actually thrive, grow, and elevate every year? I mean, it seems really obvious, right, when I break it down. And it's not to say that now your work has to suffer if you invest in your relationship. I think that if you did an exercise where you created a pie and you put in the pie according to how much energy and effort you put into it, right? So work would probably take that much for you. Self, I don't know what it'd be, and then family relationship. So if it's really disproportionate, I would start to really create your to-be list, right? And devote certain hours a week where you're now going to invest in the part that's the smallest to create a balance. I work full-time, but I know that in, again, 1, 5, 10 years from now, the regret that I would have in life wouldn't that I wasn't at the office enough or I didn't work enough. It would be that I didn't invest in the people and the things that meant most to me. And if I didn't actually refocus myself, then that would be a regret that I would feel I couldn't really change. Of course, I could once I woke up, but then maybe I would have lost 10 years when I really could have grown that. So I think that's a sobering enough thought to help you kind of decide each week, really each day, you know, when you wake up in the morning, let's say you're at the office or you're working from 9 to 7, well, then call your husband 3 times in that day, you know, just to check in. Or at the end of the night, you know, after you guys get settled, 20 minutes. It doesn't have to be these, again, like a dinner or date night. It's just about being emotionally intelligent with one another, continuous connection, being friends. I mean, if you had a friend that you didn't speak to that much or you didn't check in with and really share parts of yourself, that relationship would soon get less strong and less connected. So I would just have those honest conversations with myself every day and put effort in it. Does that make sense?
Totally. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the question. Sandra? So I keep looking down, just so you know, because that's where I see the faces, but then I look at the camera. So I'm like looking at both. Hi, good to see you, Sandra. I think you have to unmute yourself. Or do we unmute her?
I did.
Oh, there you go. Hi, we hear you now, yes. Hi. Hello. Okay.
Just fix that, yeah. Whoop. Am I unmute? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good, we hear you.
Okay, great. So, you know, in listening to all of you young women to tell you, I wanted to ask, where is the love? I mean, when this last young woman was speaking about her relationship, I think that love really in any relationship with the woman, with the man, with the child, love is the most important thing. That has been throughout my life. Also, knowing yourself and going inside of yourself and opening your heart to whomever comes your way and basically who is on your wavelength, let's say, that you can help and that you can be with. And I have been very fortunate because I felt my mom's love very, very strongly. And she, throughout the years, protected me, I felt, from my dad, who was much more chauvinistic. And my mom really was my first feminist. And she took a lot of the brunt of my father, I think, to allow me to be who I am today and to believe in myself, to love myself. And I do believe all of you must love yourself first before you can love anyone. You have to love yourself. And I feel at a very young age, I loved myself very, very much and knew that I could accomplish whatever I wanted in my life. And so far, I have been able to do that. I leave situations when I feel that the love is not there, or I've given the message and people are not, you know, I must leave so that I can constantly go to the higher level. And so many times I've had to leave friends, husband, boyfriends, because they're not, they couldn't rise to the level that I want to rise to. And this is what I love about the Kabbalah teaching. I can go as high as I want and find the person as high as I am to join with. And I think that that should be all of our goals, to grow together with that person, to support that person in their spiritual search. I have to say also that I've been very spiritual since the age of 3, and this has been my goal in life. Yes, I've accomplished doing a museum in the south of France for Eileen Gray. My business model is Coco Chanel. The women of the 20s, I think, were absolutely fabulous women. And they're important to me, very important. I've watched them. But I have to say the most important thing has always been my soul, to feed my soul on whatever I've been doing in my life. My children, so important. They're my diamonds, they're my loves, they're everything.
And I love this, Sandra. That's why you're always so young at heart. Like you said, you know, you're like the youngest, you're actually the youngest one that spoke today. Your love of life. I just want to add, I think that because the first 8 chapters of my book, Rethink Love, is all about the relationship you have with yourself, the love you have with yourself. But I did want to just adjust one thing.
Sure.
It is love, but that word is so overused and miscorrectly used. It actually has lost some of its meaning, I think. Love is never enough, really, because if you can't appreciate the love you receive, if you can't recognize it, like Sandra, you're saying your mother, you appreciated her love. You recognized her love, right? And that's why it fed you. So I think that really the number one thing I would say to everybody is to really cultivate and awaken appreciation for those that you love or those that you emulate or everything we spoke about in this last hour. And I can't believe an hour's already gone. I don't want to cut you off. So if you have one more thing, I want to give you a moment to say, but we have one more person before we end our time together today. Did you want to share anything else, Sandra?
I just want to say how much I appreciate you, Kabbalah teachings, the Rav and Karen, and on, because
thank you so much.
I do appreciate very much. It's given me a lot of love. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. Good seeing you. Okay, who is the last person that's going to?
Fernanda.
Okay, we'll just give her a second to join. And I think we should do this again, ladies. If you would like that, send us some messages and we'll create another, it won't be International Women's Day, but it will be our Women's Day.
She's on your screen as Maria.
I see her. Hi. You need to unmute yourself.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Monica. So nice to be here sharing all this with you. And my question is how to claim back our power as women? Because sometimes we tend to act like a man in order to be noticed. And I think that is not the way to claim our power back. So can you share with us how can we do that?
Yeah, I think because this is similar to a question we got earlier. And it's interesting to me because I've never wanted to be anybody else. Like, my big struggle in life was how to become myself, how to really find who I was and express that in the world. So I think that the point here, it's not whether it's a man or it's another woman or it's, you know, somebody that you really think is doing everything correctly. It's really, how can you be the best version of yourself? One. And the second thing is, how can you then reveal that into the world? And those are the two questions I'd ask myself. So for the first one, how can you become the best version of yourself? It starts with asking yourself every day, you know, how have I changed today? Or have I thought about change? Am I working towards change? And change isn't that you don't like the parts of yourself. It means that you really highlight the things that are working for you, and the parts of yourself or the aspects of yourself that don't feed you, that aren't in your best interest, you start to release those and shed those away. And then from that space, you start to really put energy towards what's real, what's important. And when you're in that headspace, honestly, it's not about man, woman, this, that. You actually, it's just you and the creator. It's you and your soul. And it's a continual feed, right? And from that way, each and every day, you get clearer, you get stronger, and you get more powerful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have two anonymous questions I think you might be interested
okay.
in answering. They're anonymous, so you would just...
Sure. So there's two. So really, these are the two last things. There's two anonymous questions that have come in. I'm going to read them and answer them, and then I will let you beautiful ladies go and enjoy the rest of your day. What are the questions? Okay, sure. Okay. Can anybody hear you or just me?
I think everybody can okay. hear me.
Oh, okay.
I think, okay. Yes. So these two questions are related and they're anonymous. One is, how can we make peace with men? I feel a lot of anger about women's history. And the other one is, how can we make this equality movement from a place of love instead of war?
Okay, the first one was, how can we make peace with men?
Mm-hmm. They said, I feel a lot of anger about women's history.
Well, I don't think things are ever solved with anger unless you convert that anger to actual steps, right? If you look at MAD, right? Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. These women, they lost children due to an accident from another drunk driver, and they were angry, of course, and devastated. And then they took all of that energy and they started to put it into purpose and meaning and creation. So that would be my advice, staying with that feeling of anger and at men. I wouldn't put men in a bucket either. I know beautiful, spiritual, amazingly kind-hearted, you know, loving and compassionate men. And I know, you know, women who are not, right? So I don't want to just put it, of course, men have done certain things. I would, though, use those specific circumstances and create change by starting something new, start a movement, educate, right? Teach a new way. So educate the past, take our history, and then also find ways to create a new history. And the second question again?
The second question is, how can we make this equality movement come from a place of love instead of war?
I think they're similar questions. And I think it just comes down to how we act. I mean, if we are trying to talk about peace, but we're using violence to do so, we're not going to get very far. So thank you all for joining me. Have a beautiful day, and I'll see you next time. Oh, and please join me for my next webinar series. It's going to be coming up on the screen, I hope, because I don't remember the date. It's two nights, 90 minutes. Here you go. It's a two-part interactive workshop, April 20th and 21st, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time until 8:30. Two powerful nights where we will talk about rethink love, but not just in romantic relationships, in all relationships, including the one you have with yourself. I hope you'll join me. Bye.